be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I suppose we should not be surprised, having stolen the election of 2020 with massive theft in all kinds of ways, manner, and fashion, that the Biden Census Bureau should be adding 2.5 million more residents to blue state population count. It's truly outrageous. There's something very fishy about the new 2020 Census Bureau data, reports Tyler Burden, also the Epoch Times, determining which state picked up seats and which state lost. Almost all of the revisions from the original estimates have moved in one direction. Surprise, surprise. Population gains have been added to the blue state. Population losses subtracted from the red. The December revisions in population estimates under the Biden Census Bureau added some 2.5 million blue state residents and subtracted more than 500,000 red state revisions. In other words, these are changes that have been made by the Census Bureau since Biden became president. These population estimates determine how many electoral votes each state receives and the number of congressional seats. Could it be a miracle coincidence? I have no doubt about it. Remember, the House of Representatives is razor thin, Democrats sporting just a 6-seat majority with 5 seats currently vacant. So a switch in a handful of seats in the 2022 election could flip the House, take the gavel away from the current Speaker Nancy Pelosi and give it to the Democrats, Kevin McCarthy, most likely. A shift of 3 million in population is the equivalent of 4 seats moving from Republican to Democrat. The original projections for census reapportionment, get this, because these appear to be accurate, had New York losing 2 seats, Rhode Island losing a seat, and Illinois perhaps 2 more. Instead, New York and Illinois only lost 1 seat, Rhode Island none. Meanwhile, Texas was expected to pick up 3 seats, Florida 2, and Arizona 1 instead. Texas gained only 2, Florida only 1, and Arizona none. Was a Census Bureau count rigged? Was it manipulated by the Biden team to hand more seats to the Democrats to get more money, more federal spending, often allocated on the basis of population to maintain their control of the House of Representatives? Is the Pope Catholic? The evidence is now only circumstantial, but when the errors and revisions go only in one direction, alarm bells take off. Here are some of the strange outcomes. Number one, in New York, we've been tracking the annual population migration changes between states since the last census in 2010. Over the past decade, New York lost about 1.3 million residents to other states. This does not include immigration, births, and deaths. Still, this is a population less loss that's equivalent of 2 and perhaps even 3 congressional seats. The final numbers, however, added approximately 860,000. Look at that. This is over a 2 million reversal. Instead of 1.3 million loss, they've added 860. That's roughly twice the population of Buffalo and Rochester combined. This is the state that has lost by far the largest population over the past decade. And remember, New York City has been reduced to rubble. It's hardly surprising. Those who can move are moving and taking their resources with them. Number two, many deep blue states had 2020 census numbers significantly revised upward from their December estimates. And those are adding on to blue states: Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Number three, many red states had 2020 census numbers lower than their estimates: Arizona, North Carolina, South Carolina. Number four, going back to the 2010 census, the final headcount in every state was within 0.4% of the original estimate. In other words, it's all been highly reliable in the past, the original estimates. 30 of them within 0.2%. This time around, however, 19 states were off by more than 1% instead of less than 0.5%. 7 were off more than 2%. New York was off more than 3.8%. New Jersey off more than 4.5%. Any statistician would agree this is statistically anomalous and is indicative of fraud. Number five, virtually every one of the large deviations from the estimates favored the Democrats. Just 5 states in the 2020 census were within the same margin of 0.4%. That all states were within from the 2010 census. Maybe the 2010 estimates were abnormally accurate, or maybe the 2020 estimates were abnormally inaccurate. The Census Bureau needs to tell Congress why these revisions under former President Barack Obama were so much larger than normal and so weighted in one direction toward the blue states. Frankly, I don't think there's anything surprising about it. If they're going to cheat to steal a nationwide election, they're certainly going to cheat to steal the alignment of the population to keep their fragile majority in the Congress sustained. Meanwhile, even though most states are opening up, we have a bizarre event in Washington, D.C., where the Democrat mayor has banned dancing and even standing at weddings. I mean, think about it. How many weddings have you attended where you couldn't even stand? I mean, this is just ludicrous. Red states like Florida, even blue like New York, have been reopening their economies and lifting coronavirus restrictions. Not so in double masking D.C., however, where Mayor Muriel Bowser has issued a decree against dancing at weddings. At a news conference that went unnoticed by all but a few local media outlets, Bowser announced last week, weddings can take place in the District of Columbia, but only at 25% capacity. She also declared standing and dancing at receptions would be forbidden. I mean, this is just lunatic. A spokesman for Bowser told Fox 5 Saturday the rule was put in place to reduce the spread of COVID-19 because when people stand and dance, their behavior changes. I mean, this is truly bizarre. Dancing was famously banned in the fictional town of Beaumont, Oklahoma, in the 1984 hit movie Footloose. Boogieing was also banned under pain of death by the Taliban in Afghanistan and in several American towns and cities during the 20th century, albeit without the threat of beheading. So Mariel Bowser is imposing Taliban-like restrictions in the District of Columbia. Twitter users who learned of this ridiculed the Democrat mayor. Here are some tweets. I'm so glad we have Mayor Bowser to protect us from the sinful ways of dancing or standing at weddings. Without her, D.C. might devolve into a cesspool of undulating arms and legs. Another, reporters. You should start reaching out now to sources on the D.C. Police Department and asking for a heads up in case any officers are forced to break up a wedding reception for illegal dancing. I'd read the S-H-I-T out of a story about that. Another, after Sean Hannity announced dancing canceled, D.C. mayor bans dancing at indoor and outdoor weddings in Washington. He added, the fundies are taking over D.C., probably the best thing to happen to it. From outside the Beltway, where restrictions are being lifted, the idea of a dancing ban still being in effect seems laughable. Florida Governor DeSantis, for example, lifted all local coronavirus emergency orders on Monday last, calling it the evidence-based thing to do, amid a decline in infections and deaths and the ongoing rollout of vaccines. DeSantis has emerged as one of the most vocal critics of lockdowns, mask mandates, and so-called vaccine passports. Despite a torrent of criticism from the media, he has earned plaudits. Congratulations for the steps he has taken to protect Florida's sizable population of seniors and yet keep its economy open. In New York, Andrew Cuomo, governor, embraced a harsh lockdown, even ordering nursing homes to accept COVID patients with unbelievable consequences. He was portrayed in the media as the anti-DeSantos, but has since come around to the benefits of reopening. Capacity restrictions will be lifted there by May 19th, he announced on Monday, with only large-scale gatherings subject to reduced capacity. Cuomo added that the city will fully reopen, meaning literally everything back to normal, within the next 2 months. Fat chance. Those who have been able to move from New York City have already moved. The luxury, the fantastically expensive businesses are all boarded up. There's not any way things are going to return to normal, where the mayor of the city, de Blasio, and his wife, who appears to be an open communist, who has benefited from taxpayer benefits thanks to being married to the mayor, have done their best to defund the police. Crime is soaring. This is all embarrassingly bad. Meanwhile, revelations continue to roll out of Maricopa County, where it turns out that county officials have admitted to withholding the routers that were demanded in Senate subpoenas. In other words, the Arizona State Senate has issued subpoenas to Maricopa County officials to turn over their routers, but they're not doing it. Now, of course, they needed a pretext. They have to make something up. We had previously believed the risk of exposing law enforcement would be eliminated by redacting law enforcement data on the routers and not producing it. But we were informed redaction did not eliminate the risk. Deputy County Attorney Joseph LaRue, who's carrying the heavy water here for the cover-up, wrote in a letter to Senate audit liaison Ken Bennett. We also learned if criminal elements or others gained access to this data, it might compromise county and federal law enforcement effort and put the lives of law enforcement personnel at risk. I'll just tell you categorically, this is total bullshit. Complete and total bullshit. Where they're trying to do everything they can to stop the audit that's taking place. It has already revealed in excess of 250,000 illegally cast votes. The subpoenas resulted in several trucks full of Maricopa County's election equipment records and nearly 2.1 million original ballots being delivered to Bennett at Veterans Memorial Coliseum for the audit, which began on April 23rd. Meanwhile, more corrupt and suspicious acts performed by the Maricopa County election team and or vendors has come to light. Dr. Kelly Ward says devices that held data during the election were snuck off-site nightly. Remember, they had early voting, so they were keeping records, you know, well in advance. We have a Mr. Jarrett, who was in charge of the election day for Maricopa County, telling lawmakers recounts have verified the tabulation machines were accurate in counting votes. He pushed that back against any allegation using Sharpie as disqualified any of the ballots. But did he know? Did he just learn? Did he just find out about the external drives being moved every night to a safe location? It certainly is difficult to believe that the director of Election Day for Maricopa County knew about the external drive being transported to an undisclosed location every night, yet still refers to Arizona's November election as fair or accurate. Meanwhile, and this is virtually brand new, Arizona Audit Director Ken Bennett, Dominion refuses to comply with the subpoena and turn over the password to their Maricopa County machines. How outrageous is this? Arizona Audit Director Ken Barnett joined One America News to discuss the latest developments in the forensic audit. System administrators are those who have access to the systems at the highest level. They are able to perform all sorts of duties. All the functions and changes in a system are under their control. They have complete and total access, can even delete or alter system logs. The fact the county does not have system administrators who had administrative access to Dominion voting machines is a major concern. By allowing Dominion alone to have administrative access, the county basically turned the system of voting in Maricopa County to Dominion voting machine people. There's no IT control here because it was all conceded to Dominion. Meanwhile, surprise, surprise, Biden DOJ steps in to put an immediate stop to the Arizona audit. We saw this coming. The same organization that manufactured and ran the Russia collusion hoax and allowed for the 2020 election fraud is now going to interfere in the Arizona audit. Do not forget the Department of Justice did nothing as the Democrats locked Republicans from ballot counting rooms and drove in vanloads of ballots in the middle of the night. Now the Department of Justice is stepping into a state's audit of election ballots. Here I have a copy of the letter. DOJ Civil Rights Division has sent a letter to Senator Fan raising concerns over how the Arizona audit is being conducted. And that's because it's being conducted in an honest and truthful fashion. Democrats really don't want the audit to go through. Imagine that. Meanwhile, DOJ claims the Arizona audit is potentially violating election law. That's really quite stunning. The Department of Justice has expressed concern the ongoing audit of the 2020 election results may violate election law and lead to voter intimidation. That's quite a stretch. The department notified Republican State Senate President Karen Fann on Wednesday last that it was monitoring the state's audit of 2.1 million ballots cast in Maricopa County, Arizona in 2020. According to the AP, DOJ specifically worried outsourcing the audit to a third-party contractor may violate federal election law that requires election officials to control the ballots for 22 months after an election. Well, think about it. What's the point of controlling the ballots for 22 months after an election if you can't conduct an audit of those very ballots? Obviously, this is contrived. This is the Department of Justice seeking to invent a bullshit excuse for undermining the audit that is exposing the massiveness of the election theft in just one county in Arizona, which undoubtedly will be replicated in lots of other large counties across the country. Remember, if you're going to steal an election, you have to do it where the votes are. You have to do it in the large population centers. Going out to little rural counties and going to have a large number of votes aren't going to work. So that's why it's going to be in major centers. It's going to be like a Detroit, Michigan, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Maricopa County, or Antrim County in Michigan. The contractor's intent to contact voters may also result in future illegal voter intimidation, the DOJ said. Such intimidation may also violate federal statutes on elections. In other words, they want to preclude having any interaction, any viable interaction with persons who actually cast votes to determine, no doubt based on a statistical sample, whether the votes they cast were the votes that were recorded. Remember, and the DOJ appears to have learned this lesson well, it was Stalin who observed, it doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them. And now you have the Biden Department of Justice trying to interfere with a verification of how it was actually conducted, which would expose the enormity of the fraud. Past experience with similar investigative efforts around the country has raised concerns that they can be directed at minority voters. Remember, for Democrats, everything is race, 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 which potentially can implicate the anti-intimidation prohibitions of the Voting Rights Act. Principal Deputy Assistant General Pamela Carlin wrote in the letter. So we have Matt Couch tweeting. So Maricopa County, Arizona, they just finally admitted that they didn't have the password for the machines, which means they didn't have the password for the elections, which means they had no control over the machines for the elections. This is criminal, folks. He's got it exactly right. This is criminal. Meanwhile, a positive development, Glock wins and Biden loses in a major liability suit, also decided in Arizona. Glock is one of the most popular manufacturers of firearms, where its Glock 19 was the best-selling pistol on GunBroker in 2020. Really excellent, very popular, highly reliable. They're used by police force in at least 48 different countries. They've been supplied to national armed forces, security agencies. The pistols have become the company's most profitable line of products. God didn't deliver for Joe Biden, who recently begged the Lord to help him erase the progressionally approved immunity that gun makers have from lawsuits. In a little notice decision, but with major impact, a federal judge in Arizona has ruled in favor of pistol manufacturer Glock and dismissed a suit brought by the Brady campaign to prevent gun violence on behalf of a man accidentally shot and paralyzed. Get that. Accidentally shot and paralyzed. U.S. District Court Judge Susan Brnovich upheld liability immigration granted in the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, passed in 2005 to block gun makers from a potential wave of industry-killing lawsuits. Brnovich, nominated by former President Trump and the wife of Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich, dismissed multiple claims in the suit that the act's protections were illegal writing. The statute is constitutional. These attempts to hold manufacturers responsible for the criminal and negligent misuse of firearms are misguided and are attempts at legislation through litigation, she wrote. The law was passed with a bipartisan majority in both chambers of Congress to keep activists from attempting to bankrupt firearm manufacturers by tying up in court with unfounded claims. This demonstrates why protecting this legislation against attacks by President Biden and gun control factions in Congress is critical. This is a very appropriate, completely straightforward decision and ruling, which is going to be of tremendous benefit to the American people by continuing to allow them to gain access to weapons under the Second Amendment. The suit was filed against Glock, an Austrian gun maker, on behalf of Carlos Taviesto Jr., who was in a car with others returning from a church retreat in 2018. Another teenager found the 9mm pistol in the car and apparently thought it was safe because the magazine holding the bullets was missing. However, there was a bullet in the chamber, and when she pulled the trigger, it hit Taviesto, paralyzing him. The suit charged that Glock, the number one firearms manufacturer in the United States in terms of sales, did not have adequate safety features on the gun, warning that a live round was in the chamber. The pistol does not have a chamber indicator, but the suit said the gun was defective because it did not include other warnings or safeties. Glock said it was covered by the Immunity Act because the shooting was a criminal act, really a negligent act. Brnovich agreed with Glock that this was a victory for the Second Amendment. We've come to the break. We'll continue right after. See you then.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I think we all recall the situation in St. Louis where the two homeowners found their property invaded by hundreds of protesters. They were both attorneys. They simply showed their firearms, one an AR-15, the other a handgun, and the crowd dispersed. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact this was a perfectly legitimate exercise of defense of one's own property, even one's own life, in the face of massive trespassing and threats and intimidation, where there were even chance of burning down their homes, the two homeowners were prosecuted. Well, the woman responsible for the prosecution, St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kimberly Gardner, is at it again. It turns out now she was leading the prosecution and committing all kinds of improprieties and going after the former governor of Missouri, Eric Greitens, who is off to a very fast start politically. She, of course, is funded by George Soros. And this is one more of the dirty techniques that the Democrats use to try to maintain their political power, namely by undermining and attempting to discredit and smear promising Republican candidates for the future high office, such as the governor in this instance, or Matt Gaetz down in Florida for another, or even Marjorie Taylor Greene, who have now joined forces. It's a fascinating story that I'll also bring you today. I will take callers later in the show. I'll let you know. Meanwhile, investigation finds massive wrongdoing by prosecutor in case against ex-Missouri governor. Listen to this, because it's instructive about what George Soros has been doing to corrupt the judicial system across the United States. Missouri's chief legal disciplinary officer accused St. Louis top prosecutor of sweeping misconduct in the failed prosecution of former Governor Eric Greitens, saying she lied to judges in court filings and testimony, withheld exculpatory evidence from the defense, misled her own prosecution team, and violated the constitutional right to a fair trial. St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kimberly Gardner, one of the early local prosecutors bankrolled by liberal mega donor George Soros since 2016, engaged in, get this, 62 acts of misconduct that resulted in 79 false representation during Greitens' now-dismissed criminal prosecution, or according to Chief Disciplinary Counsel Alan Pretzel's memo, obtained Wednesday by Just the News. Probable cause exists to believe the respondent is guilty of professional misconduct, Pretzel declared in a 73-page memo that repeatedly accused Gardner of withholding evidence of innocence and providing a false portrait to the courts, the defense, and even her own prosecution team. Pratzel also accused Gardner of lying during the disciplinary proceedings long after the case was dismissed against Greitens, a former Navy SEAL and rising Republican star who was forced to resign as governor in 2018, less than 2 years after having been sworn in. The disciplinary action against Gardner follows a 2019 indictment of her former chief investigator in the case, ex-FBI agent William Tisby, on 7 felonies alleging he committed perjury and evidence tampering during the Greitens probe. Gardner also remains under criminal investigation by a special prosecutor as Tisby awaits a trial that's been delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic. The unraveling of the criminal case was highlighted in a Just the News investigative report last year, prompting some to compare Gardner's actions to the FBI's now-confirmed misconduct during the pursuit of then-President Donald Trump during the Russia collusion probe. Pratzel concluded that Gardner had violated her responsibilities as a lawyer and a prosecutor, essentially suborning Tisby's perjury by failing to take reasonable remedial measures when she knew Tisby was giving false answers to questions. She offered and elicited false testimony when questioning Tisby during a deposition ordered by the court, and also provided inaccurate information to a fellow prosecutor during a private session in the judge's chambers that later led that prosecutor to make false statements to the court. Gardner, St. Louis' first Black chief prosecutor, filed an initial response to the allegation suggesting race and politics were involved. Of course, Democrats, it's race, it's race, it's race. Not their own impropriety, not their own corruption, not their own unwillingness to adhere to the law, not to do with their own desire to suborn law and order, nor their enthusiasm and support for riots and looting and lawlessness across the land. No, none of that. It's all racism. It's all whites. It's all Republicans who are responsible. I mean, it's reached a point of complete and total absurdity. Filed an initial response to the allegation suggesting race and politics were involved, of course, but acknowledging she made mistakes in the Greitens prosecution. Yeah, mistakes, right. In hindsight, were each of every one of Ms. Gardner's actions in the intense, fast-paced Greitens investigation and prosecution perfect? No, but that is not the measure or purpose of the attorney discipline, her legal team wrote. She claimed she had been the target of attacks for her tireless and courageous efforts to reform the criminal justice system and was being treated differently compared to other lawyers. Attacks on Ms. Gardner have taken many forms, ranging from overtly racist emails sent to her office to investigations and lawsuits against her. She also showed her continued disdain for Greitens, calling him a Republican golden boy. Well, she took care of that, didn't she? Gardner has been the object of frequent controversy and criticism, including as the focus of an ongoing special prosecutor's criminal investigation in the Greitens case, and was recently removed by a court in the prosecution of a St. Louis couple accused of brandishing weapons during last year's Black Lives Matter protest. She has frequently used race as a defense, even filing a lawsuit under the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871 last year, alleging the St. Louis Police Union had mobilized to thwart her efforts to reform criminal justice, and denouncing the white, ethically conflicted special prosecutor investigating her and Tisby. That lawsuit was thrown out last September. Pretzel's memo, however, provides the most direct and serious threat to her hold on the St. Louis prosecutor's office. Disciplinary action, if upheld by a hearing panel in the Missouri Supreme Court, could range from public admonishment to loss of her law license, the latter of which could end her tenure as circuit attorney. The disciplinary memo cited a litany of violations of rules designed to ensure ethical behavior by lawyers and prosecutors in fair trials for defendants. It alleged she made false statements in court filings, engaged in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, and harmed Greitens' right to a fair trial by keeping required evidence of innocence from the defense. Gardner violated the rules of criminal procedure and court orders by concealing discovery and exculpatory evidence, the memo added, where the case against her appears to be simply overwhelming. Meanwhile, we have a very curious development. The precise significance is very unclear. In a divorce proceeding between Melinda and Bill Gates, which some are suggesting is not just a convenient excuse to sell off a lot of Microsoft stock when he's anticipating a collapse in the market. Melinda Gates reportedly furious over the relationship between her husband and Jeffrey Epstein. A new report states Melinda Gates was very uncomfortable with a meeting between her husband, Bill, and late accused pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, where many of us suspect that Jeffrey is not late, but alive and well, and sipping Mai Tais, possibly even on his own island in the Caribbean. The meeting allegedly caused problems between Bill and Melinda and purportedly damaged the relationship. The Gates announced their intent to divorce on social media this week. According to a Thursday report from the Daily Beast, the couple met with Epstein in 2013 while in New York City. Gates was still Microsoft chairman at the time of the meeting. Following, Melinda reportedly told her husband she was furious at the relationship between him and Epstein and felt incredibly uncomfortable with the encounter. Gates' friendship with Epstein, who for years was accused of molesting scores of underage girls, still haunts Melinda, according to friends of the couple who spoke to the Daily Beast this week in light of the pair's divorce announcement, which had been weeks in the making. Bill reportedly also met with Epstein several times beginning in 2011 to solicit donations for a charitable fund 3 years after the late accused pedophile pled guilty to soliciting a young girl. He also reportedly rode aboard Epstein's private jet, known, of course, as the Lolita Express, during one occasion in 2013. Bill has previously said he never had any business relationship with the late billionaire financier and that he never had any private meetings with Epstein. In 2019, he said, "I met Epstein. I didn't have any business relationship or friendship with him. I didn't go to New Mexico or Florida or Palm Beach or any of that. There were people around him who were saying, hey, if you want to raise money for global health and get more philanthropy, he knows a lot of rich people. Every meeting where I was with him were meetings with men. I was never at any parties or anything like that. He never donated any money to anything that I know about." The outlet also noted that Boris Nikolic, Harvard Medical School grad and former advisor to Gates, was mysteriously named a backup executor of Epstein's last will and testament and reportedly acted as a go-between between Bill and Epstein, which seems to me to contradict Bill's claims that they didn't have a business relationship or a friendship, and yet a former advisor to Bill Gates was named a backup executor of his last will and testament. Meanwhile, damage control. Melinda claims she warned Bill Gates over convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein escapades. Something interesting is happening, or is it just a red herring for the goyim? Who knows? But according to a recent article from Legacy Media, Melinda Gates, who is now single, in case you're interested, was feeling uncomfortable about Bill meeting with Epstein. Who knows? Maybe Ghislaine Maxwell made a deal and is singing like a canary, and Melinda ain't going down with this ship. Or maybe this divorce is not about Bill and Melinda, but about asset shifting. Let's see if Melinda gets a lion's share of the assets while Bill holds onto the paper wealth. Also, if you wanted to dump half your stock without freaking out the market, a fake divorce would be a great cover. As in, this divorce is a huge sign that a massive stock market crash is incoming. Getting back to our story, the respective meetings Melinda is complaining about took place back in 2013, or 8 years ago for Gen Zers, which is rather strange on her part. I mean, why wait so long, girl? According to what we know so far, Bill Gates, the philanthropist, vaccine poop, population control obsessed billionaire, has met with Epstein at least 6 times, including when Epstein was a convicted pedo. Bill not only flew Lolita Express, Epstein's private jet, multiple times, but also visited Epstein at his mansion in New York City more than once. All this is mainstream information, as in this is what they admit to being true, or to put it bluntly, this is the least we know about Epstein's Mossad-backed blackmail operation and Bill Gates. Remember who the Maxwells are. Now, if you ask me, there was only one reason to be friends with Epstein, and it wasn't for financial advice. And speaking about Epstein, I wonder what year it was that Bill started preaching about climate change, drinking poop water, eugenics, and similar crap. Because you can't bribe or threaten violence with the ultra-rich. Blackmail is far more effective. And that was Epstein's shtick. Jeffrey Epstein was probably the pimp for a U.S.-Israel government honey trap, same-sex, child sex blackmail operation. It most likely included some or all of the following: U.S. Department of Justice, FBI, U.S. Central Intelligence, Israeli Mossad. He wasn't the first such pimp to die by suicide. The previous most high-profile government pimp to die of suicide was Craig Spence. Facts like these have been known for many decades from firsthand accounts and published in books, newspapers, and other articles. The legacy media are unanimous in refusing to actually inform their viewers about these events. They protect the perpetrators among the ruling elites, because they are also the perpetrators of these crimes. It's funny, yet very telling in regard to who lords over us, that in the country running around as global moral authority, being a wealthy Jewish child molester is a state-sanctioned activity. The preposterous story about Epstein hanging himself in an anti-suicide cell on a tailor-made horizontal suicide bar while under an international spotlight, guards sleeping, cameras broken, then apparently lost, was truly humiliating for the American people, who are basically told by the elites, "We don't care about what you think or what you know. What are you going to do about it?" And the answer is nothing. Then we had the stolen election, and now the country is circling the drain, because people are too lazy or too stupid to get off their damn couch. I think that's a pretty fascinating indictment, very perceptive about the situation we're in. Meanwhile, they're not getting enough people jabbed. And mind you, as I've reported before, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has described these mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna as perfectly designed killing machines. Well, it appears that the vaccinations in the United States are coming to a bit of a halt, that most are wanting to take a wait-and-see approach, which is very appropriate because a lot of these effects won't actually surface until months thereafter, although there are some poor souls who are dying within 20 minutes or so of getting a shot. So what are they going to do to overcome it? Well, how about New Jersey offering a free beer to residents who get vaccinated in May, where Governor Murphy said he's trying to get more people immunized or really killed? I mean, is your life worth a beer? A vaccination card will be the ticket for a free brewski in the Garden State this month. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy announced a shot and a beer program Monday that provides a free glass of beer at participating locations to anyone over 21 who gets their first vaccination dose this month. The plan is part of Murphy's multi-pronged approach to increasing the state's vaccination numbers and reaching its goal of 4.7 million residents vaccinated by the end of June. The program is one of many initiatives taken by city and state governments to get more people vaccinated. And according to a public health expert, they are effective. Sad to say. We need that push, Dr. Perry and Hal Kipnis, Dean of the Rutgers School of Public Health, told ABC News, we have to find a way to motivate people. This is one way to do it. As of Monday, more than 7.5 million vaccine doses have been administered in New Jersey, and 3.2 million residents, about 37% of the state's total population, have been fully vaccinated, according to New Jersey's health department. Like most parts of the country, the number of new daily vaccinations has steadily declined over the past few weeks, which I say is a good thing. As part of the Shot in a Beer program, the vaccinated resident can show their vaccination card to 13 participating bars and breweries in the state, and they'll be rewarded with one free beer. The bars include the Hackensack Brewing Company, Gaslight Brewery and Restaurant, Battle River Brewing, and more. Gaslight is the right word for this entire operation because we are being played. Residents who receive their first shot before May are ineligible, according to a spokesman for Murphy's office. The focus of the drive is to get as many new vaccinations as possible, said Dan Bryan, a spokesperson for the governor's office. Hal Kipnis, this is the dean at the Rutgers Medical School, said the fact the governor's office is focused on those who haven't received their shots is critical. We're at the point where those who were already motivated got their vaccinations. Now we've got to focus on others. And I have here a map, a vaccine tracker, showing that the states with the highest rates of vaccination include Alaska, New Mexico, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, where I reside, but also New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, Maryland, and Maine. Brian added that more locations may be included in the list of available bars in the coming weeks, and that the program was done with the approval of the State Department of Health. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention has not given specific guidance on alcohol use immediately following a vaccine shot. The state is also taking other measures to increase vaccination numbers, including door-to-door campaigns, phone calls to people who pre-register for their shot but haven't gone to their appointments, and outreach with community partners. New Jersey's peer promotion comes less than a week after Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont announced a similar promotion for his state. However, the Connecticut promotion doesn't limit the free beer to residents who receive their shots in May. Last week, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice announced younger residents will receive a $100 state bond if they get their shots. Hal Kipnis said incentives are common in science. No, they aren't. I mean, unless you're talking about applying for a grant for a research project, particularly among clinical trials and studies, and they do appeal to hesitant people. Well, what he means then is drawing people in to be suckers in an experiment is something that can be conducted in a manner providing incentives. But in this case, because these vaccines are experimental and because their effects appear to be devastating, including even death, it's completely inappropriate. While New Jersey's beer program won't likely end vaccine hesitancy, it will help the state come closer to a fully vaccinated population. And they're claiming cut down on COVID-19 cases. Frankly, I think it's all bullshit, very serious bullshit. But that's what's going on. You won't believe the horrifying story I'm going to report after we come back from the break. Mind you, I will be taking callers, but probably about halfway or more into the next hour. So I won't be taking callers immediately. The number, of course, is 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. And Mitchell will have you standing by. And when I'm ready for callers, I'll bring you into the show. 540-352-4452. Too many stories here to cover today to begin taking callers now. But I shall do so later in the show. I look forward to hearing from you. In the meanwhile, we're about to hit our break. Here it comes. See you on the other side. Ooh, still have a few minutes. Well, let me tell you about Dr. Fauci. This is a story that's completely horrific. Dr. Fauci funds the organ trafficking of aborted babies, helping researchers graft baby scalps onto rodents. How awful is this? Under the direction of Dr. Anthony Fauci, Tony the Rat, the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease is engaged in the most unethical Machiavellian research of the 21st century, rivaling the work of Dr. Joseph Mengele, who led horrifying medical experiments on twins to help the Nazis justify the Holocaust. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting "This is a drill, this is a drill" on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now, mind you, this story is rather grotesque, and so many references occur in ordinary conversational context to the Holocaust based upon the presumption that the official narrative was correct. My own research has demonstrated that is not the case. And indeed, my book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, was banned by Amazon.com at the request of the ADL. Because it contained not information showing we hadn't gone to the moon, for which there's overwhelming evidence, but that the whole official narrative of 6 million having been put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B was in fact not historically accurate, had no empirical basis, no actual justification, but is a myth that's been propagated where Israeli or Jewish political clout is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over the Holocaust. So they have to maintain the illusion. If you go to JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, for example, you'll find I have a presentation there. Let me pull up the number about the, you know, the distortion of World War II. Very significant distortion where I included an interview that Amy Goodman was having with a former head of education, an Israeli cabinet member for education, who was talking about the fact that in Europe, when criticism is made of Israel and the acts of its government, that they refer to the Holocaust. In the United States, when actions or objections are raised about to Israel's conduct, they bring up anti-Semitism. So what you want to do, I think, is to go there to check it out. I'm looking for the exact number here about the history of World War II. There it is, number 23, 9 August 2020. The official World War II narrative, historical fact or mass illusion. For those who are looking for something in writing, check out my piece, The Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump Science, and you can find it online at, for example, The Government Rag. Excellent, excellent presentation there. And you'll see how I have been able to dispatch the whole official narrative. In fact, it's not even very challenging. It falls apart almost immediately, where there turn out to be have been 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives in the international press, beginning already in 1890, all 236 prior to the Nuremberg tribunals, that the number 6 million appears to have a source not in history or fact, but in a disputed passage of Leviticus that's been interpreted to mean that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when they're minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames. But even that's disputable and requires an interpolation, because there was no word in the original Hebrew for 6 million. And where the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping meticulous records about the age, the sex, the race, the ethnicity, the religion, and the cause of death of everyone who died in all the camps, where in 1993 they recalibrated their total, which was 296,081 died from all causes, none of whom were put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B, where Zyklon B, which is a mild form of cyanide, was used to kill body lice, which were spreading typhus and dysentery within the camps, because they wanted to keep everyone there healthy. You can't get work out of a corpse. These were labor camps, not centers for extermination. In fact, hundreds, even thousands of babies were born in these camps, and, you know, understanding the elements of human reproduction. That's obviously inconsistent with these having been centers for extermination. Hey, did you know there was even a UK soccer team at Auschwitz? I was so impressed by discovering this photograph in Nick Kohlerstrom's brilliant book, Breaking the Spell, for which he invited me to write the introduction that I put it on the back cover of And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either, which you can pick up at moonrockbooks.com. This is my favorite, actually, of all these books I've edited. For we have a dozen books published altogether at Moonrock. Amazon has banned six. They've banned on Sandy Hook, on the Boston bombing, on Orlando and Dallas, on Charlottesville, on Parkland, and, as I'm observing now, even the Moon Book, though it doesn't appear to be because of the voluminous proof that we never went to the moon, but because of the expose about the Holocaust. Meanwhile, this horrific story about Tony the Rat, who will go down in history as the greatest mass murderer, I believe, in the world has ever known, was deeply involved as the point man for coronavirus gain-of-function research in Wuhan, China, working with Peter Daszak at EcoHealth Alliance. Fauci sent millions in taxpayer money to Chinese virologists to advance virus chimera research that was previously banned in the U.S. This unethical research was justified to develop new vaccines for the world. Now Fauci is part of a global push to restrict human freedom, holding people down until they submit to mRNA biohacking vaccines, which, as I've already observed, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has described as perfectly designed killing machines. But that's not all of Fauci's Machiavellian ways. She's funding He's funding the fetal organ trafficking industry, helping to create human rodent chimeras. Developing various chimeras that exploit humans isn't the only sadistic research that Fauci helped advance in the 21st century. An investigation by the Center for Media Progress, CMP, finds Fauci also helped fund university-level research that harvests live livers and scalps from aborted babies. The NIAID uses taxpayer money to essentially fund the fetal organ trafficking industry while procuring fetal organs for the creation of human rodent chimeras. Scientists at the University of Pittsburgh have been attaching aborted baby scalps to mice torsos to conduct medical experiments on human immune systems. These acts are crimes against humanity, as aborted babies are carefully selected and strategically harvested to create chimeras for medical experiments. Does this morose immune research coincide with a gain-of-function virus research used to exploit humans and develop vaccines? After all, aborted fetal cells are used in vaccine research. Indeed, we have innumerable reports that aborted fetal cells are in the vaccines themselves. The University of Pittsburgh, where, may I say, they have a distinguished department in the history and the philosophy of science, really a very fine department, but alas, is a hub for some of the most barbaric experiments carried out on late-term aborted human infants, experiments funded by the United States government. At the same time, the university sponsors the local Planned Parenthood abortion business in what looks like an illegal quid pro quo for fetal body parts. The University of Pittsburgh is now revealed as a central hub for human rights abuses, where trafficking and experimentation of aborted baby organs takes place in the light of day. This operation occurs because the university received a large grant from Dr. Fauci's office. This macabre research was revealed in an undercover sting operation by investigative journalist David Daladin. His testimony, brought before the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives, exposes Fauci-sponsored experimentation on aborted baby parts. This video reveals evidence from within the University of Pittsburgh. The university researchers developed a protocol to harvest the freshest, most pristine livers from five-month-old aborted babies in order to isolate massive numbers of stem cells for experimental transplantation into adults. Footage shows University of Pittsburgh researchers poking and prodding an aborted baby to chest reflexes, make sure it was still alive for organ procurement. Planned Parenthood of Western Pennsylvania is under federal investigation for using abortion doctors at the University of Pittsburgh to maintain a steady supply of fetal organs and tissues. During the live abortion procedure, a premature baby is carefully selected for labor induction. The baby, still attached to the umbilical cord, is cut open, and abortion specialists extract the live liver. This protocol was funded by a $3 million grant from the National Institutes of Health. The NIH also funneled the university another $1.4 million to continue trafficking aborted fetal kidneys that the NIH needed to continue grotesque fetal research across the United States. Very, very disturbing. Meanwhile, on a more positive note, who saw this coming? WHO, the World Health Organization, rejects worldwide vaccine passports. I must tell you, the rationale given here does not appear to be the actual influential rationale, which appears to have come from the airline industry, worried that its profit margin was going to crash if vaccine passports were to be imposed for international travel. But here's what the public is being told. An emergency committee of the World Health Organization has weighed in and set the tenor on worldwide vaccine passports. The WHO's emergency committee recommended that proof of vaccination not be required as a condition of international travel, maintaining its stance on the issue under growing debate. The independent experts, in a statement issued after meeting last Thursday, cited limited evidence on whether vaccination against COVID-19 reduces people's ability to transmit the virus and the persistent inequity in global vaccine distribution. States should recognize that requiring proof of vaccination deepens inequities and promotes unequal freedom of movement, the panel said. Notice that word equity, inequities. That's becoming ubiquitous now in democratic politics. In the United States, the prospect of vaccine passports has already received strong pushback from the governors of Florida, Ron DeSantis, Texas, Greg Abbott, and Mississippi, Tate Reeves. And some states, like Arkansas, are drafting legislation to ban such restrictions by state and local businesses. However, Hawaii is full steam ahead to create its own vaccine passport. White House Secretary Jen Psaki even walked back initial talk the Biden administration supported nationwide vaccine passports. The government is not now, nor will we be, supporting a system that requires Americans to carry a credential, she told reporters at the White House. There'll be no federal vaccination database, no federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential. The administration wants to protect Americans' privacy and doesn't want vaccine passports used against people unfairly. What gave the WHO panel pause? Limited evidence that vaccines actually reduces the transmission of COVID-19, and not everyone can or will get vaccinated. But I guarantee you, the real reason was pressure from the airlines industry. The science is definitely not settled, and there are huge concerns about not only privacy, but personal freedom. Yet Dr. Anthony, Tony the Rat, and other agenda-driven politicians and health officials are acting as if the vaccine were all important and that everyone will receive it. WHO seems at least to have an understanding this is not how life on Earth or individual governments work. Any restrictions on international travel mean restrictions on commerce. With last year's worldwide shutdown due to the coronavirus, the hardest hit parts of the world were those who could least afford it. Developing countries and third world countries reliant on tourism and international commerce. WHO has already come out against the efficacy of lockdowns because of the economic impact. And locking down borders via vaccine passport would produce the same result. In October of 2020, the New York Post published an article covering WHO's statement on lockdowns and reported, "We and the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Tight restrictions cause significant harm, particularly on the global economy. Lockdowns have just one consequence you must never, ever belittle, and this is making poor people an awful lot poorer." Meanwhile, we have a political cartoon, a woman speaking to several members of the Amish community and saying, "Why isn't COVID affecting you people?" To which they reply, "We don't have TV." I think that's it. A lot of what's going on here is really a mind game, propagating the belief, the illusion in a pandemic, which appears not to be bona fide. Now, we have had guests on lately, including Friday, who are convinced that there's a bona fide pathogen involved here. I will simply say that we had a report come out from Johns Hopkins, which they've sought to suppress, showing no increase in the number of deaths in any age group from the past years. We have, complementing that, no increase in sale in oxygen tanks, which would be necessary if vast numbers of people were being hospitalized. We also have no increase in IV, stands and IV drips. We also have the insurance industry, a report from an expert on mathematical modeling and accountancy reporting no increase in premiums. That's all ridiculous. If actually there were a surge in deaths from the coronavirus, I find it really quite outrageous. I'm opening the lines for anyone who might like to call in. Let me remind you the number 540-352-4452. I have a couple more stories I'll continue to report, but if anyone would like to call in, 540-352-4452. The first of these additional stories is that Tucker Carlson outed Frank Luntz as a Democrat who has been doing polling for the Republican Party. And I thought Tucker did a very deft job of exposing him. Well, surprise, surprise, Frank Luntz has struck back, blaming Tucker Carlson's criticism of him on Tucker's presidential aspirations. Get this. Frank Luntz, longtime GOP pollster, is not happy with Tucker Carlson's recent criticism. On the New York Times Sway podcast Thursday, just last, Luntz said he believed Carlson's reporting is a product of the Fox News host's supposed inclination to run for president. This is frankly just ridiculous. Tucker realizes he can make any accusation he wants in that cadre because he's very popular among a certain segment of conservatism. In my opinion, this is completely and totally discrediting Frank Luntz. I think Tucker is running for president. I think that's what he's going to do. And I think he's going to try to demonize and destroy anyone who might stand up against him. And that's all this is. Well, that's ridiculous. Frank Luntz hasn't stood up against Tucker Carlson in the past. What Frank Luntz has done is to use his position as a pollster with Republican focus groups to promote a Democrat political agenda, especially about immigration. Earlier this week, and I watched the show, Tucker reported on a tip that Luntz was renting a room to House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy in his Washington, D.C. apartment. He alleged McCarthy's actions violated ethics rules in the House about receiving gifts, since Luntz has worked for Google. Here's a transcript from the Fox report. Over the weekend, we got a call from a source who said that, in fact, Frank Luntz and Kevin McCarthy were not simply friends, they're roommates. Kevin McCarthy lives in Luntz's apartment in downtown Washington. That's what we were told, and honestly, we did not believe it. The top Republican in the House lives with a Google lobbyist? Come on. Even by the sleazy and corrupt standards of politics in Washington, that didn't seem possible. In fact, it sounded like a joke. This morning, since we heard it, we called to check with Kevin McCarthy's spokeswoman. And when we raised it, she all but chuckled at the suggestion. No, when he's in Washington, she told us, Kevin McCarthy rents hotel rooms or sleeps in his office in the Capitol. He certainly isn't living with Frank Luntz. Okay, Tucker continued, and that seemed logical to us, but we did press a little bit because we got the tip from someone reliable, and we just wanted to be sure. So the spokeswoman said she would get back to us. 2 hours later, we got this text, quote, following up on our conversation from earlier today, because of the pandemic, McCarthy has rented a room in Washington at a fair market price from Frank. Luntz denied any wrongdoing on the Times podcast. I'm not a lobbyist. I've worked through Google on language. I don't advocate for them. Prior to this segment on Luntz, Carlson referenced an Axios piece in which Luntz said, Republicans are more pro-immigration than elites realize, to which the Fox host ridiculed Luntz for not supporting law and order. Luntz said on Newsmax, Trump voters support the DREAM Act, the ability of these people who are brought here, the ability to earn a path to citizenship. He added, we need these people. Frank Luntz doesn't want to debate it, Tucker said. He wants instead to pretend that his personal opinions are established fact and that the Republican Party had better listen to them and obey. It's a non sequitur whether or not Carlson might run for the presidency as of 2024. As of now, there's no indication that he is. In August, the Fox News host told Mediate's podcast, The Interview, he never wanted to be involved in an effort to run for the presidency, that it's hard to imagine he could be a legitimate candidate. He also said in 2019 at the National Conservatism Conference, he would never run for president. Luntz is sidestepping and avoiding any criticism with a cop-out. It's a hallmark example of an elite GOP ally who has run the show too long to prove their untrustworthiness to fairly engage in discourse with his senators. Carlson's occupation entails reporting on elites like Luntz, but Luntz sees it differently, it would appear. I think this is a very serious revelation that the GOP have been played for too long by Frank Luntz, who's actually using his position as a pollster for the party to promote the agenda of the other. I find that quite outrageous, and support Tucker in his expose. Again, I reiterate, you're welcome to call in to the show. The number 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Well, I continue with another story, a rather interesting one, in fact, the battle for the soul of the GOP. Representatives Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene tear into their own party during a rally at Florida's The Villages as they raise the stakes in Republican Civil War with their America First tour. This is good stuff. Firebrand Republican Representative Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene have torn into their GOP colleagues at a red meat-filled rally in an ambitious attempt to force party leadership to fall in line with their pro-Trump faction of the party. Gaetz and Greene kicked off their barnstorming America First tour with an event at Friday night at The Villages, Florida, a massive retirement community known as a fierce Trump stronghold. We've got this battle going on right now for the soul of the Republican Party, Matt told the roaring crowd of senior citizens. Maybe we're the leaders, Marjorie. Maybe they should follow us. Today, we send a strong message to the weak establishment in both parties. America First isn't going away. We're going on tour. It comes as House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who's focused on winning back GOP control of the House next year, faces tough decisions about whether siding with the populist faction will help hurt the party. We'll be right back.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I'm a huge fan of Matt Gaetz and of Marjorie Taylor Greene in particular, and I do agree. Kevin McCarthy has a serious call to make here about whether go the progressive route, which they represent, or something more traditional, which I think is going to fall flat, and where a crucial issue has to do with deposing Liz Cheney, who right now is number three in the House leadership, but who's been speaking out against Donald Trump, claiming that the election was legitimate when it was massively stolen. And there are predictions she'll be out already this week. Meanwhile, we do have a caller, Scaredy Cat. I'm very glad you've called in. Give me your thoughts.
Hey, Jim and Mitch. So I have to talk gently because you might not like what I have to say. Just touching back upon, I want to say three things, but maybe I'll just, hopefully they're all related. So it's about the Taliban. So you said that the Taliban has come to America or Washington, D.C., the Shemir browser has canceled dance. I do want to just remind people, the listeners, and yourself that the Taliban did very commendable and hard work eradicating heroin, and that was a gift to all of humanity, and they solved the drug addiction. If their success had been had been left alone and left to prosper, then the drug addiction disaster would have been solved, especially for sons. Yesterday being Mother's Day, and that Mother's Day was actually also, I think, designed by a mom who wanted young men not to die anymore in actual wars, in filthy and painful ways, unnecessarily dying just to make rich men and rich women richer and filthier. So I think they shouldn't be so harsh, obviously, the Taliban. But I'm thinking that they have no choice. They have been painted into a corner to be taking a very harsh stance because, again, of filthy rich persons dropping bombs on their heads for 20 years straight. And my mom was telling me, this is many years ago, she said she had heard a Pakistani girl saying that, this is the Pakistani girl, young girl talking now, that you Americans are crying because, you know, you were bombed for one day. You know, we have, at that time it was probably 15 years, but now it's 20 years consecutively. So how many days is that? 8,000 days, maybe? One day of bombing versus 8,000 continuous days of bombing on Muslim persons' heads. And so so I think they're taking a harsh stance that they canceled American Boogie Woogie because they are, with their heart and soul and body and mind, trying to preserve their country just to breathe, to stay alive, and also to keep their culture alive. The Taliban didn't exist as an Afghan group a few years ago. You know, it was created as a reaction to preserving their land for their people because of the superpower. You know, when I was little, there was another war in Pakistan, and at that time, Afghanistan, we were happy. We had to escape in disguise, that is, wear costumes, my family and a couple of other families joined together, in disguise and cross over into Afghanistan, which was a sleepy little happy country. And we were so happy when the border was crossed. I was little. I was 9 years old. But I remember that yell of the men of happiness. Oh! Finally, we're across the border into Afghanistan. The joy they had that they are not under threat of death anymore. To cross into Afghanistan because it was a happy, sleepy little country with, you know, with their sheep. You know, it's a mountain country. The people are mountain people, the Afghans, just like Heidi and Peter in Johanna Spyri's Heidi story of the Switzerland's Swiss Alps. And I think that they're taking a harsh stance to keep out American culture. They have to preserve their own. So I myself personally, my own personal favorite hobby is dance. So I think it's humanity's job. We are under threat of life. And what goes away with human life is human culture. So I believe it's a duty of every human being to now, by tooth and nail, preserve their own culture. And this was my second point. On Saturday, I think on Chris Weinert's show, I had heard a young woman, Holly, I think was her name. What a breath of fresh air. She was so gentle, so accurate, and so lovely. I hope she becomes a host soon here at revolution.radio, and that's my vote for her. But she had asked you, I think it's the last question on your interview on the Brutal Honesty show for everybody. It's Saturday evenings at 6 o'clock on Studio B. I think she must have been co-hosting or substitute hosting, guest hosting or something. And she said, ultimately, what do you think people, especially young people, should do? And you said that decide what you like. Second, decide what you do well and pursue that with vigor. So that's my second point. I just put it out there. I want myself to preserve my own culture, and along with my own culture, you know, visit other people's culture. We have 500 different human cultures at least on our planet right now. And if I could have my own hour for a show, that would be wonderful. So I'm putting it out there.
I think you'd be terrific. And Scary, look, the points you're making are impeccable. 100% correct. Something I worry about often when I'm reporting the latest news is a lot of what I'm reporting is what others have written. You know, I mean, they're coming from multiple different sources. The opening story about what's fishy about the Biden census originated in the Epoch Times. The story you're talking about banning dancing and standing came from Russia Today, from RT. So actually, when I report what RT has said, that does not mean I necessarily endorse it. And I think perhaps sometimes it's not always completely clear when what you're hearing from me, whether it's my opinion or those are the sources that I'm reporting. Yes, indeed, in this story from RT, it said dancing was famously banned in the fictional town of Beaumont, Oklahoma, in the 1984 hit movie Footloose. Boogieing was also banned under pain of death by the Taliban in Afghanistan and in several American towns and cities during the 20th century, albeit without the threat of beheading. I think your points on behalf of indigenous culture of Afghanistan are very relevant. They're very appropriate. We have no business being in Afghanistan. We should never have been there. Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. The 19 alleged Islamic terrorists were fabrications. 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. None were from Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan. He had nothing to do with 9/11. He was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes. He was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osmond. He was visited by an official of the agency at a hospital in Dubai where he was receiving medical treatment for his maladies. He died of his medical maladies on 15 December 2001 and was buried in an unmarked grave in Afghanistan. It's tough to get dialysis machines in and out of those caves. Everything you've said seems to me to be completely appropriate. Many have wondered why we were there. It's very analogous to the case of Vietnam. It was only in, what, I think, 1994 that Walter Cronkite gave a presentation where he showed a map of the continental shelf off of Vietnam, which was widely believed to be loaded with oil. And now the international oil companies had already subdivided the continental shelf off of Vietnam. It was only a 30-minute show. It was the only time I ever heard of an explanation as to why we were in Vietnam, apart from, of course, the mythical domino theory, which had no substance or historical foundation. The Vietnamese were fiercely nationalistic. They would not have kowtowed to any pressure from China. Ho Chi Minh was a Vietnamese nationalist, just as Salvador Allende in Chile, just as Fidel Castro in Cuba, just as Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. I am strongly supportive of nationalist leaders who want to utilize the resources of their nation to benefit their own people. We even conducted a coup in Iran in 1953 and took out their democratically elected president Mossadegh to replace him with a Western stooge, the Shah, who introduced a reign of terror that would endure until 1979 when the popular uprising retook control of the government from the stooge that we had imposed. We were in Afghanistan, I am 100% convinced, because of its mineral wealth, that we are looting the minerals of Afghanistan, which includes one of the largest lithium deposits in the world, save one in Bolivia, where lithium is used in for components of computers, triggers, and nuclear weapons, and for electric car batteries, and in addition, to protect the poppy crop. The CIA became addicted to drug dealing in Southeast Asia. It's become the biggest drug dealer operation in the world. George H.W. Bush, who served as vice president but had a deep history with the CIA, participated in the assassination of JFK, conducted the Bay of Pigs fiasco, was not nicknamed Poppy for nothing. Many an American officer has returned from Vietnam complaining that his sole role there was to protect the poppy fields from destruction by the Taliban that had all but eradicated the growth of poppies. They had taken out at least 90%. So, Scaredy, I'm really, really pleased you call in to make these points because they're so very important. Go ahead and continue your thought, and then we'll bring in Saul from Colorado who's standing by. Scaredy.
Hey, Jim, that's why we all love you so much. You are all of ours godfather. You are so, so fair-minded. And just to go back to just some little details, like the Pathans, you know, same people who speak Pashto in Pakistan was the land of my childhood. So it's called the Northwest Frontier Province. So that's bordering onto more Western countries in Asia, such as Iran. So the Pathans, you know, we grew up enjoying hearing about their sword dance. This is, you know, their culture, Afghan and Pakistan culture. And they are very well known for being the most honorable and brave persons ever. None of us compare ourselves to them. If you say a word to them, their word is gold, titanium, uranium, whatever you want to say is an expensive metal. Just if they agree, you have to talk to them, and they're very fierce people. Even like a little seven-year-old boy, when you visit there for a day or so, just drive through the famous Khyber Pass, which Alexander the Great came through. That's in Pakistan when he came to India, Alexander, 2,500 years ago. So if you visit them, you will see how fierce they are, and in parallel, totally honorable. Like if you say something, you will get it. Like I will just be in fear, dreadful fear. If I cheat them, if I say something untrue, if I make an agreement with them and then go back on it. If they give you your word, you can rely on that. So,
which is why, Scaredy, they're so incensed that they arrived at an agreement with Donald Trump as president of the United States that American forces would be out by the 1st of May, and Joe Biden rescinded the agreement. They will never reach any agreement with Biden. They no longer trust America, and for good reason. Trump's word was supposed to be the bond of the United States, and the United States has now been completely discredited in the eyes of the Taliban. Your points are so good, Scaredy. I just can't say enough about how happy I am that you brought this up. I want to bring in Saul ever so briefly, and then I'm going to come back to you. Saul, join the conversation. Can't hear you.
Where's your book, Scaredy Cat? I'd really love to see you publish something. It would really be great if Scaredy Cat published a book.
Oh, that's really interesting.
A lot about the region, because that's where she grew up. She's really got something to say, and I'm just going to get out of the way and let you all speak of this. This is just fantastic.
That's very dear of you, Saul. Scaredy, go ahead, pick up. Saul has deferred to you. He's allocated to you his time.
Hey, Saul. So as far as books are concerned, let's make Dr. James Fetzer rich and well-read. So he has the books out there. Let's buy them. So let's buy two at a time, keep one for ourselves to know the details of what he wrote, but then give the second one as a gift to somebody so that when that second person, some, you know, friends, somebody you love, talks about, hey, I was reading that, you know, on that subject, then you have your own book to refer to. And this method I recommend and highly, highly recommend to all the listeners. Whenever you buy a book, buy two. One for yourself and one for somebody you love, and sometimes for somebody you don't know who you will love, in other words, a stranger. So my method now is I make a point to daily talk to at least one random stranger, but not so random because they just made delicious food for me. In other words, try to find all the little restaurants, and you'll be surprised how many you find. You think, oh, on this strip of highway or main road, there's only the big, you know, McDonald's, let's dare I say the name. But then as you stop and drive slowly and you have your head turned to the right side, you know, of the sidewalk, you'll begin to spot more and more and more. And I've met many people, and strike up whatever conversation. It doesn't always have to be fighting about coronavirus, just something friendly about their culture. And then maybe on the second, and I plan to go back to each person I talk, I plan to go back in a month or two, and then maybe take a book. If we did talk about the what I call the theft demic. Again, I mentioned filthy rich people. That's just to steal all goodness, destroy all culture. So the thing is, so that's as far as books go. So let's make, let's buy Jim's books. And then as far as my own fame and fortune, Sal, so now you're voting for me for my own show. And so I'll do my writing instead of with a pen. I'll do it with my lips for freedom, freedom's lips. And so, Jim, you can, if you could request Gerber to produce it for me. He did used to talk to me last year. I know I'm saying all this out of the blue. But just to
Scaredy, I'm on it. I'm on it, Scaredy. Now, I have never cared about money, and I will never be rich. When I've had money, even a modest amount, I've given it away, much to my wife's dismay. But you have made so many wonderful points here today. I'm really pleased you called in, Scaredy, and I want you to round out your thoughts, because I know you had like a third point you wanted to make. You didn't have the opportunity yet.
Oh, I was just fleshing out what I would say. So don't worry, audience or management. It's not going to be a harangue. The thing I love most, I mean, I know I keep talking about Jew culture and how we have to fight it, but the purpose of fighting it is in our human community. If you count the people, there's one person who is a Jew and 499 another person, English, Korean, African, Christian, Hindu. And so I want to, in my show, just present all the loveliness that we can learn from each other. And Jim, I know you're not religious, but just the good advice we can take from any book. And there's an Islamic philosophy called 124,000 messengers. So the saying is that in all different epochs and ages of history, and in all different nations and languages, there has always perpetually messengers from God being sent. God, if unreligious people don't like the word God, substitute the word goodness. So there's a messenger that is a leader for goodness that is always there, even if you don't know their language. That's why obviously the logical conclusion is not to war with each other. Only kill the opponent if the opponent is deliberately coming to harm you. Otherwise, the nations of our beautiful, cute, cozy little planet Earth just should learn from one another. So I would like, the first thing I would like to present, I was thinking the Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, the hour just before the fetch. So I would just like to present a song, a dance, and then explain what the words mean. And then I would probably start with a language that I know, which is Bangla. But then I would like to present something, a song in German that my little daughter, who is now in her, I shouldn't say so, in her 30s. But when she was 4 years old, the very first song she learned was this beautiful little German folk song, a little poem she learned on the piano when she was her little fingers moving, and it was coo, 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 coo. Springtime is here. It's in German, only we didn't know, so we learned the English words. And so that's what I want to do, preserve human culture with all your heart, soul, body, mind, everything you got, all your money, preserve your own culture. And that's what I'd like my 9 o'clock Saturday morning. writing it in stone that Jer Bear is going to produce because he knows he loves me.
Scordy, I love the idea. I support the idea. I'm going to make a recommendation, and I'm just so pleased you called in today to make just exactly the point you made, because I think the situation with Afghanistan is grossly misunderstood. I do believe, I mean, you mentioned Alexander the Great. He was unable to conquer Afghanistan. The Soviet Union was unable to conquer Afghanistan. The United States will be, and has proven to be, unable to conquer Afghanistan. We've simply inflicted tremendous horror, damage, toil, blood on Afghanistan, on the people. We should get out. Trump had made the right agreement. He was getting us out. And now Biden and the scumbags with whom he is surrounded are staying in. It's for no good reason. It's outrageous and an insult. Let me just add, by the way, for those who have an interest, I have an article on UNZ Review, UNZ Review, entitled What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories, that has now drawn around or over 700 comments. Let me just say, this is highly unusual. It means that I have hit some nerves. There are a lot there who are trying their best to defend the official narrative of 9/11. I and others aren't going to let it happen. But let me just say, if you want to have an intellectual exercise, if you want to stretch your mind thinking about matters that are actually important, go to UNZ Review and check out What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories. I think you'll find it rewarding, beneficial, educational. And of course, if you're so inclined, to add a comment of your own. Meanwhile, thanks to Scaredy Cat, I appreciate Saul calling in to defer to Scaredy and Mitchell as always. We'll see you back on Wednesday.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
We'll be right back.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage.